Good evening and welcome to the local news. Today is Wednesday, May 1st. I'm Lauren Schmidt, reporting for KMUD. In tonight's news, arrested Cal Poly Humboldt protesters released. Humboldt Jail Rehab Project next. And headline Mendocino. Stay tuned, news on those stories and more coming right up. The Cal Poly Humboldt community is still reacting to the police raid of the occupation on the university quad that called for divestment and a ceasefire in Gaza, which has become a nationwide battle cry across the country on college campuses. On the eighth day of the local protest, students saw a substantial response involving approximately 200 officers from various law enforcement departments, including Sacramento and San Francisco, early Tuesday morning. The university confirmed that 32 individuals were arrested during the operation at 3 a.m. that saw 13 students, 18 non-students, and one faculty member arrested. No injuries were reported following the incident. In response to these arrests, there have been subsequent protests demanding the dropping of all charges and the release of the individuals involved, taking place at the Humboldt County Courthouse. And our KMUD News volunteer reporter shared these interviews from yesterday afternoon.
This is Matt Kurth. I'm here at the courthouse. There's a protest going on in support of the students who were jailed and in support of Palestine and against the ongoing genocide in Palestine. And I'm here taking some interviews. So can you tell me your name and why you're here today?
Hi, my name is Sherry. I'm a retired nurse. I can say nurses against genocide. I'm here today because I'm greatly concerned about the U.S. involvement and on all different levels on supporting this genocide. And we want the world to know that not every American is for the genocidal Zionists. We support Palestine, free Palestine.
Can you tell me about what happened at Cal Poly Humboldt and maybe what you saw in your experiences?
Yes, I went by there yesterday afternoon. I spent a few hours there talking with the students, taking a look around, and I can say that they were peaceful, that they are devoted. I'm very, very proud of them. And I'm very sorry that they were treated with a fascist, hard hand. I don't know what you call it. They did not deserve that. There's been a lot, my observation, there's a whole lot of lies on the state of the campus in that they were very tidy. There were a couple of paint spray items, not many. And of course, I don't agree with that, but I don't think it was all of them doing it. I think it was just somebody who decided that they were going to do that because everybody else was very respectful. And it just broke my heart to see them treated the way they were last night in that manner. And it makes me wonder what is happening with our country. Have we crossed the line on actually being fascist now? And anyway, I'm proud of you students.
This is Matt Kurth. I'm here at the courthouse and we're talking to some folks out front that are protesting. Can you all tell me, I'm here with two people, and can you all tell me how you like to be identified and why you're here?
Hi, I'm a student, graduate student at Cal Poly Humboldt, and I'm here in solidarity with the occupation and the faculty, staff, students, and community members who've stood up for the liberation of Palestine and are demanding Cal Poly Humboldt to disclose, divest, and declare its connections with Israel.
We got some reports last night that there was a professor who was arrested and he is refusing bail and has declared he's going on a hunger strike. Do you have any information on that you'd like to share?
So Dr. Ruhala was with us from the beginning and has been a staunch supporter of students and just an incredible mentor. And I think it says a lot that he, I think, was the only professor who was out there on the front lines since the very beginning. And a majority of Cal Poly Humboldt faculty have actually spoken out in support of us. But to my knowledge, Ruhollah is the only one who has faced arrest. And we just wanted to stand here in solidarity with him and all of the arrestees, demanding their immediate release and for all charges against them to be dropped.
At this time, it's believed that all individuals who were arrested in connection to the Cal Poly Humboldt protest have since been released, including Assistant Professor Ruhollah Agh-Hassaleh. Reached by email, Dr. Ruhollah stated, quote, "I'm breaking from my fast at 6 p.m. at the Oriental Buffet in Arcata," end quote. He invited the community to join him. On social media, one of the activists named Lizzie with the Do Nothing Society stated that protesters spent the night zip-tied, standing lined up in the cold, traumatized by their experience. They would later be transported to the Humboldt County Jail, where she says they were forcibly stripped and x-rayed. Quote, "feeling utterly dehumanized by the process of incarceration," end quote. Across the country, police have cracked down on pro-Palestinian protests on college campuses, leading to over 1,000 arrests nationwide. However, the police response has sparked outrage from members of the community. Notably, on Monday evening, prior to the raid, local leaders tried to prevent that very action from law enforcement. Humboldt County Supervisor Natalie Arroyo sent a letter to Cal Poly Humboldt and the California State University leadership, urging them to have patience, understanding, and a dialogue with students. She noted that this process has included very few civil leaders in the design-making process, and that local elected officials are deeply concerned for the welfare of all individuals who are on campus. Quote, "property damage can be fixed, but physical harm to people can't," end quote. The letter was authored by Humboldt's 4th District Supervisor, Natalie Arroyo, and was signed by 33 other elected officials, including Humboldt Supervisors Mike Wilson, Steve Madrone, WIAT Chairman Ted Hernandez, Frankie Myers, the Vice Chairman of the Yurok Tribe, and two Arcata City Council members, Sarah Schaefer and Stacy Atkins Salazar. The California Faculty Association Humboldt chapter also released a statement condemning the police raid on the Cal Poly campus and announced solidarity with protesters. They stated that the actions over the last week by Cal Poly Humboldt administration eroded the trust of faculty, staff, students, and the larger Humboldt community. Last week, the CFA passed a vote of no confidence for Cal Poly Humboldt President Tom Jackson, and used the leadership of Dr. Keith Flamer of College of the Redwoods as a powerful juxtaposition, following Dr. Flamer's recent letter to President Biden, where he called for an immediate ceasefire.
Yes, my name is Keith Flamer, and I serve as the president of College of the Redwoods. And I have been here for close to 18 years, and I've been the president for a little over 8 or thereabouts. Came here from Chicago, and before that I was in business with Kraft Foods and then the Marine Corps before then. So I've had experience at both at community colleges and baccalaureate institutions.
In his recent letter to President Biden, Dr. Flamer called for a ceasefire in Gaza. And with that in mind, we asked what his response is to the ongoing protests across the country on college campuses.
I guess, quite frankly, I'm of two minds, and it'll coalesce into one as soon as I start talking. I applaud, and I would always support anyone's right to getting their voice out there. Free speech is something that I will always support. And I always encourage students, faculty, and staff to make their voices known in a very peaceful way. I don't have a problem with the encampments as long as it doesn't hinder the education of students or the right of workers to work. What is deplorable to me is when I see all the violence going on across the country. I see police escalating. I see the protesters escalating. I see protesters and counter-protesters fighting each other in the streets. That's not what free speech is all about. And I understand the emotions are running high. And I get that. I think that the message is being lost on why they're doing it, and so much as what they're doing. And that is a deplorable situation. Now, I sent my letter to President Biden not to get into the politics of it because it's complex, but to, as the president, is to make our voice known, my voice known, and the Board of Trustees, calling on the United States to work their influence to have an immediate ceasefire. And why is that? Is that we see what close to 30,000 people who've died in the last, women and children who've died in the last 200 days. And when we see women and children dying, starving, being shot on both sides, hot hostages on both sides being done, we have a moral obligation, at least in my mind, to do something about it.
The letter also noted that the United States plays a vital diplomatic role in ending the suffering, and that saving lives is a moral imperative.
It calls on President Biden to use the influence of the United States to effect an immediate ceasefire in Gaza and in Israel, and not to choose sides, but also the ceasefire, but also to have the hostages return to their respective areas. And we call on it from a humanitarian perspective, right? Is that, and so that, quite frankly, is the gist of the letter.
On April 17th, Columbia University sparked a movement of student protest against Israel's ongoing military actions and occupations in Gaza. The New York Times report 30 different colleges across the country are also conducting solidarity protests. And we asked Dr. Flamer if College of the Redwoods has seen similar actions.
We haven't had protests at all, but we have students talking about it, talking not about protesting, but talking about how they could make their voices known of what's going on in Palestine. And I'm very proud that our students are asking the right questions, like, why is this happening? What's the history? And I'm also proud of the fact that our faculty set up a table in the middle of our quad to be able to answer student questions on the historical context of why it's happening, just and looking back 100 years and showing the complexity of the issue and encouraging students to protest in a very peaceful way, or if they actually have to get some more information and judge for themselves what's true and what's not, but to make their voices known in a very peaceful way. So that really, that's what our faculty and the administration is focused on, is to educate, which is a perfect opportunity right now.
Many in the community have applauded Dr. Flamer and the College of the Redwoods administration for their proactive approach, which they say highlights the failure by Cal Poly Humboldt. We asked Dr. Flamer if he agrees.
I looked at what's happening at Cal Poly with some sadness, but I also know that my friend Tom Jackson did exactly what he had to do to safeguard property and people. I know that he is totally committed to students and student learning, and I think what happened up there just may have disrupted that. So I'm not going to judge his actions and what he did or didn't do, but I know his heart, and I know that he wants students to learn. And I know that he supports free speech without a doubt, but I think that the violence and the vandalism is something that I don't think anyone should, quite frankly, condone.
Sharing his final thoughts, he stated that his institution stands for freedom, justice, dignity, and peace for all people.
That the point of higher education is to educate people on really complex, thorny issues. And I think both CR and Cal Poly pride themselves on being able to help students think critically. But even more so, on both campuses, we pride ourselves on getting students involved, getting students to come up with solutions and to learn how to have dialogue across lines that may be thorny, right? And so that's what I encourage people to continuously do, is find common interest and find solutions to problems that have been problems for decades here.
The latest press release from Cal Poly Humboldt, which you can find at humboldt.edu/emergency, was a message to the campus community. It acknowledged the emotional strain these events have caused and outlined the preliminary steps taken towards recovery, including the continuation of the campus closure and changes to commencement ceremonies, which will be held on May 11th. But instead of a traditional celebration, there will be a series of smaller off-campus ceremonies grouped by majors at three locations in local areas. The venues and ceremony sizes will accommodate the registered graduates and their anticipated number of guests. The regional commencement ceremony in Los Angeles area will take place as scheduled. The university also stated that it's continuing to clear Siemens Hall and Nelson Hall of garbage and are beginning to paint over graffiti on the exterior of vandalized buildings as university police continue to assess the scope of damage. Areas at or beyond a barricade in or around Siemens Hall remain closed off. KMA News will continue to share updates. A planned expansion of Humboldt County's jail to allow more rehab services won't happen due to its cost. Daniel Mintz reports.
Humboldt County's vision of building a resource center to help people stay out of jail won't be realized as construction costs have outpaced state funding. Following staff recommendation, the Board of Supervisors voted to give up on a Community Corrections Reentry Resource Center at its April 24th meeting. Designed as a four-story adult rehabilitation center adjacent to the county jail in Eureka, the resource center would have met the state's goal of shifting felony offenders out of prisons and into local jails and local transition programs. The state awarded the county $20 million for the envisioned 44-bed facility in 2016. But as county architect Jake Johnson explained, that award proved to be inadequate when a bidding process ran its course last year.
By February 2023, we were given the proceed to bid by the State Public Works Board. Bidding documents were released for bidding. At that time, the estimated cost was $22,043,000. In April, we received one bid. That bid was $34,997,000, which was approximately $13 million over our budget. So given that number, we had some internal discussions, discussed with the CAO's office, discussed with others, and it was determined that the money for awarding that bid was just not available.
An effort to reimagine the project under a halfway house model ensued, but that option was also over budget by $9 million. County Sheriff Billy Hansel said the project team has explored every option, including trying to get more state funding. But that's not going to happen anytime soon, as the state is facing a budget deficit of at least $38 billion by next year. The project stems from AB 109, the state law governing the prison-to-jail shift. It aims to reduce recidivism, and its degree of success and its cost obstacles were discussed in this exchange between Hansel and Supervisor Steve Madrone.
We can't change our scope. We couldn't add to the existing project because, yeah, you know, this is our existing project. We had $20 million, and that's all they're going to give us for this.
Yeah. I imagine there's other programs in the state that are also experiencing this dilemma from the pandemic and the supply chain and cost increase and everything else. And it's unfortunate these programs don't have some thought-out process to be able to adapt to those kinds of things, because that's the world we're living in now, right?
And this is part of the, you know, the goal here, too, is to educate the community, but also educate the board and county staff that AB 109 and that public safety realignment continues to devastate small local governments.
Yeah.
And so this was sold to us as a remedy, right, to provide $20 million for us to build on to help with the cost of AB 109. And then the reality is we don't even get to spend that money. Reality is we have all of the problems with none of the remedy.
Supervisors voted to end work on the project. Supervisor Mike Wilson was absent. The meeting was adjourned in memory of well-known local attorney Ed Denson, who died earlier this month. Supervisor Michelle Bushnell and Board Chair Rex Bone talked about Denson's life and work, which spanned music, local radio, and civil rights advocacy.
Eugene Ed Denson is an American music group manager, producer, record label owner, and later lawyer who has made notable contributions to folks, blues, and early San Francisco rock. And then also he had a K-Mud show, was on K-Mud for years. Pain in the butt to the county, but an advocate to folks. He just really cared about people and people's rights, and won more than he lost, and he will definitely be missed in the Southern Humboldt area and throughout Humboldt County. And my condolences to Mary Alice and his family.
See, yeah, he was around forever, and back in the 70s and 80s and 90s, helping out the small independent farmer when they happened to get in trouble.
In Eureka for K-Mud News, this is Daniel Mintz.
In today's headline, Mendocino, K-Mud's Matt LaFever reports on a former officer settling her harassment lawsuit against the Willits Police Department, a body being located off the coast of Mendocino, prompting an investigation, and a controversial gas station project in Redwood Valley in this report.
This is Matt LaFever with the headlines out of Mendocino County for Monday, April 29th, 2024. Former Willits Police Department officer Natalie Higley recently settled a lawsuit against her former employer, alleging harassment and hostility from her superior, Lieutenant Derek Hendry. In June of 2023, Natalie Higley filed a civil lawsuit against the city, claiming sexual harassment and hostility from Derek Hendry, a controversial figure in Mendocino County law enforcement. The city council recently approved a settlement agreement with Higley, awarding her $2.25 million to resolve the case. This settlement effectively concludes Higley's legal battle with the city. Higley's case is not the first involving allegations against Lieutenant Hendry. Previously, the city settled a lawsuit with former police chief Alexis Blaylock, who also reported a hostile work environment with actions including Derek Hendry. Hendry's actions have cost the city a total of $2.5 million in settlements between these two cases. According to court documents, Higley's career with the Willits Police Department began when she was recruited by then-Lieutenant Hendry, enrolling in a regional police academy in July 2020. Her stint at the agency would be over by the following October after she reported Hendry's alleged harassment to Chief Fabian Lizarraga. Derek Hendry's tenure in law enforcement has been marked by controversy. He was fired from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office before advancing to the rank of lieutenant at the Willits Police Department. Hendry was terminated from his position in April 2022 amidst growing scrutiny of his conduct. Lorna Allen, another woman, came forward alleging physical violence and abuse of authority by Hendry. The allegations against Hendry highlight a pattern of behavior that has shaken the Willits Police Department and the community. Alexis Blaylock, a former Willits police chief, described encountering resistance and gender-based discrimination during her brief tenure as chief. Blaylock's experiences shed light on the challenges often faced by women in leadership roles within law enforcement. Despite these challenges, there's hope for a change within the Willits Police Department. City Council member Greta Kane expressed optimism about the department's future, emphasizing the dedication of its officers and the ongoing commitment to community policing. She said, "It's been a rough few years for the department, but we're fortunate to have a core of dedicated officers and dispatchers who care deeply about our community and are committed to helping Willits Police Department be the best that it can be." Let's now turn to the Mendocino County coast, where authorities are investigating a grim discovery. On April 26th, deputies from the Mendocino County Sheriff's Office responded to the report of a body spotted in the ocean near Fort Bragg, California. At around 2:54 p.m., deputies confirmed the sighting of a deceased human body floating offshore. The response was swift as local first responders, including the California Department of Fish and Wildlife and California State Parks, joined efforts to recover the body. Rescue swimmers from the California State Parks braved the choppy waters to assist with moving the body to a waiting boat from the California Department of Fish and Wildlife. The challenging shoreline conditions necessitated a coordinated effort to safely retrieve the remains.
Authorities made the decision to recover the decedent with the boat and transport the remains to Noyo Harbor due to the steep rocky shoreline and the choppy sea conditions. Once back at Noyo Harbor, authorities initiated a coroner's investigation. However, identifying the deceased person has proven difficult. Initial observations suggest the body is that of an adult female based on clothing, but no further identifying information has been uncovered. The Mendocino County Sheriff's Office is actively investigating this case and seeking information from the public. If you have any details related to this case, please contact the Sheriff's Office Dispatch Center at 707-463-4086 or provide information anonymously at 707-234-2100. Let's turn to a contentious development project along Highway 101 in Redwood Valley, where a newly released traffic impact study is sparking heated debate. A gas station developer's updated traffic study reveals that peak traffic estimates for a proposed gasoline station and a convenience store are much lower than originally thought. The project, which includes a 10-pump station, is facing scrutiny from Caltrans over the need for a right-turn lane off the freeway. The gas station project has faced significant opposition from Redwood Valley residents, concerned about increased noise and disruption to their rural life. Christine Boyd from the Redwood Valley Municipal Advisory Council highlights concerns about this mismatch between the project's urban-style design and the rural environment. She said, quote, "This is an urban-style project that doesn't fit in our country setting," unquote. In response to potential permit denial, the developers hinted at selling the site to a local tribe, bypassing community input and tax contributions. This move has further fueled opposition amongst residents. As tensions mount ahead of the May 7th Board of Supervisors hearing, the future of this project remains uncertain.
The California Department of Alcohol and Beverage Control has taken action against Hopper's Corner Saloon in Potter Valley after a tragic car crash on December 26th, 2022. The bar's license has been suspended for 20 days following an investigation that revealed one of their employees served alcohol to underage individuals who later were involved in the deadly collision. Alcohol and beverage control agents determined that 18-year-old Samuel Caldwell, after leaving Hopper's Corner Saloon, drove under the influence of alcohol, resulting in a fatal crash that claimed one life and injured several others. Fabio Serra, a server at the saloon, had been identified as the individual who furnished the alcoholic beverages. 80 acres of pristine land known as Rocky Ridge in Mendocino County have been transferred to California State Parks, expanding Montgomery Woods State Natural Reserve to over 2,800 acres. Rocky Ridge boasts old-growth redwoods, Douglas firs, and serves as the headwaters of Montgomery Creek, a vital habitat for endangered species like steelhead trout and coho salmon. This addition provides opportunities to enhance public access and wildlife connectivity, creating a contiguous greenbelt spanning over 11,500 acres in the Big River watershed. Representatives from both the California State Parks and Save the Redwoods League expressed gratitude towards the Wager family for their generous contributions towards conservation efforts. April 25, 2024, a Mendocino County Sheriff's Office deputy made a significant arrest along Highway 128 in Yorkville. The deputy, on routine patrol, came across a parked vehicle where a man wanted for homicide in Lane County, Oregon, was found. The suspect, identified as 49-year-old John Kelly from Eugene, Oregon, was alone in the vehicle. Upon investigation, it was revealed that Kelly had an outstanding arrest warrant for homicide issued by Lake County, Oregon. The Lane County Sheriff's Office began their search for John Kelly after the discovery of a deceased adult female with suspicious injuries at a residence near Junction City, Oregon. Local law enforcement was put on high alert when a license plate reader detected Kelly's vehicle along Highway 101. Residents were cautioned about Kelly, describing him as armed and dangerous. Following his capture, Kelly was taken into custody and is currently held without bail at Mendocino County Jail. He awaits extradition to Oregon to face charges related to the homicide case. The 45th annual John Drucker Memorial Rhododendron Show, hosted by the Noyo chapter of the American Rhododendron Society, in partnership with the Mendocino Coast Botanical Gardens, is set to dazzle visitors on May 4th and 5th. This renowned juried show, the largest in California, will feature over 800 stunning rhododendron entries, filling the exhibition tents with a kaleidoscope of colors and fragrances. The show is free for all to enjoy, open from 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. on Saturday and 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. on Sunday, May 4th and 5th. Explore a wide selection of roadies and other plants available for purchase and engage with local growers and experts for gardening tips.
And that's the latest from Mendocino County. I'm Matt LaFever in Hopland, reporting for KMUD News.
That's all for tonight's broadcast. Thank you for listening. Thanks to our engineer, Larry Lashley. And thanks to our reporters, Matt Kurth, Kelly Lincoln, Daniel Mintz, Ryan Christensen, and Matt LaFever. Reporting from our studio in Redway, I'm Lauren Schmidt.